Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Dogs and Drugs Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On February 19, 2013, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Florida v. Harris, and on March 26, the court announced its decision in Florida v. Jardine. Both cases involve the use of narcotics detection dogs and the Fourth Amendment. The question in Florida v. Harris was whether a narcotic detection dog's alert constitutes probable cause for the search of a private vehicle. In a unanimous opinion delivered by Justice Kagan, the court held that because the training and testing records demonstrated the dog's reliability in detecting drugs, and the defendant failed to undermine that evidence, the dog's alert provided probable cause for searching the vehicle. Florida v. Jardine considered whether taking a narcotics detection dog to smell the exterior of a house where police suspect marijuana is being grown constitutes search under the Fourth Amendment. In an opinion delivered by Justice Scalia, the court held by a vote of 5-4 that the dog sniff did constitute a search for the purposes of the Fourth Amendment. Justices Thomas, Ginsburg, Sotomayor, and Kagan joined the majority opinion. Justice Kagan filed a concurring opinion, which was joined by Justices Ginsburg and Sotomayor. Justice Alito filed a dissenting opinion, which was joined by Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Kennedy and Breyer. To discuss the cases, we have Alina Traeger, who is an assistant professor at George Mason University School of Law. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Professor Traeger.
The Supreme Court recently decided a pair of cases, both dealing with the requirement that the Fourth Amendment imposes on police use of trained drug detection dogs. I'll talk mostly about Florida v. Jardines, which is the more complex and controversial of the two cases, and then briefly discuss the second case, Florida v. Harris. The holding of the court in the fact of Jardines is simple enough to state. The court decided that using a drug-sniffing dog on a homeowner's porch to detect drugs within the home is a search under the Fourth Amendment. Justice Scalia, writing for the majority, and Justice Kagan, her concurrence, both suggest that this is, in fact, an easy case. The resolution of the case may well have been easy for the majority, but why it's easy, or more precisely what rule of law or legal standard drives the resolution, is surprisingly difficult to pin down. This makes the implications of the decision for other kinds of police actions rather uncertain. The facts here feature two detectives and a drug detection dog, Frankie. The three approached the front porch of Jardine's private residence, and after sniffing about, the dog alerted at the front door, indicating the likely presence of drugs. The officers obtained a search warrant on the spaces, which led to their discovery of marijuana plants in the residence. The detectives had no probable cause for their initial action for approaching a private residence with a drug-sniffing dog. If that action is a search under the Fourth Amendment, which presumptively requires probable cause and usually a warrant, then it was unlawful. So was the detective's action a search? Prior to last year, such a question would most likely have been approached as a question of reasonable expectations of privacy under the landmark case of Katz v. United States. Under the Katz approach, the court would ask whether the actions of the detectives here violated Jardine's reasonable expectation of privacy. This has been the dominant way of dealing with search cases since 1967. Last year, the Supreme Court's decision in United States v. Jones introduced or resurrected another way of determining whether state action is a search. That decision, which was also authored by Justice Scalia, held that the government's physical intrusion or trespass on an area enumerated in the Fourth Amendment for the purposes of obtaining information is a search. The Fourth Amendment protects the right of people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects. Therefore, trespass or an unauthorized physical intrusion in one of those enumerated areas for the purposes of gathering information is a search. Now, that's true whether or not the intrusion violates a person's reasonable expectation of privacy under Katz or not. As a result of Jones, in this case, the court had a choice between deciding this question in terms of expectations of privacy under Katz or in terms of a physical intrusion in a protected area under Jones. And the concurrence, which is authored by Justice Kagan, reasonably concludes that it actually doesn't matter which analysis we use on these facts. It's a search either way. But because the majority opinion is authored by Justice Scalia, who's not been a big fan of Katz, he resolves it purely on the property-based basis announced in Jones. This is significant because it's the first case to apply the holding in Jones to different facts. The court holds that here, as in Jones, a search occurred because agents of the state physically intruded on a protected area to gather evidence. The protected area here is not an effect, as in drones, it's a house, and it's well established that the area immediately surrounding a home, the so-called curtilage of the home, is included within the constitutional protections accorded to houses proper. The conceptual difficulty in this case, which was not present in drones, is that it's less clear that evidence was gathered through a physical intrusion or a trespass. In Jones, a clandestine attachment of a GPS device to a car would constitute trespass whether it was done by the police or a private citizen. It would be trespass whether the police used the information learned against Jones in a criminal trial or not. It would still be trespass if it's used by, say, a jealous lover to track Jones's movements. Of course, it's only a search for constitutional purposes if done by the state and done for the purposes of gathering information. But it is trespass, or a physical intrusion in the first instance, whether or not that information was gathered. This is not the case in Jardines. Not every visitor onto his front yard and porch would be a trespasser or an unauthorized intruder. And by custom, we recognize that many visitors have an implied invitation, or an implied license to approach the front door of a private residence. Friends, neighbors, postman, salesmen, and so on are not trespassers merely because they enter onto our private property. These visitors have an implied license to approach the front door and visit with us. Now, obviously, that license doesn't extend to everyone, and the central question that divides the justices here is whether the detectives and their dog exceeded the bounds of that implied license. The majority holds that there's no customary invitation to introduce a police dog to explore the area around the home in hopes of discovering incriminating evidence. The dissenters, per Justice Alito, think the customary implied invitation does extend to police officers with a trained dog. The implied invitation extends to unwelcome and welcome visitors alike, so the officers here can't be trespassing just because the occupant wouldn't be pleased by their presence. And the court has previously said that this implied invitation definitely extends to police officers who knock on the front door to talk to the occupant, even if their purpose is to gather evidence against that person. So to the dissenters, the detectives and their dog here are not different in any material way from the officer who knocks to ask questions. So why aren't the detectives here just like the officers who knock on the door to ask questions? Well, the answers offered by Justice Scalia and Justice Kagan in the concurrence are intuitively appealing, but the legal standard at stake is surprisingly elusive. The justices resort to a few vivid illustrations to make their case. Justice Scalia points out that the customary invitation extends to a visitor who comes to the front door and knocks, but not to a visitor who enters the front path and proceeds to explore it with a metal detector, or to a visitor who marches a bloodhound into the garden before saying hello and asking permission. Justice Kagan draws an analogy to a stranger who comes onto the porch and uses super high-powered binoculars to peer through the window without knocking or asking permission first. Now, those analogies do sound compelling. The dissent claims that there are no cases directly on point which would hold that there's trespass on such facts. But even if the dissent is right about trespass law, I think most people and lawyers would hesitate to say that any of these hypothesized visitors are covered by the implied invitation. But it seems to me that the majority struggles to articulate the legally relevant features of these uninvited intrusions at a level of abstraction above the particular facts in this case, or above the particular facts of their hypothetical analogies. In other words, what is it about the visitor with a metal detector, or the visitor with a bloodhound, or Justice Kagan's visitor with binoculars that makes their presence at the front door an uninvited physical intrusion? Moreover, what is it about them that's not also true about the police officer who knocks on the front door with an investigative purpose? Justice Scalia offers a few formulations as an answer. The scope of the implied license, he writes, is limited to specific purposes. The purpose that the detectives had here is the kind that makes the visitor an intruder. Well, what was that purpose? The court says their purpose was to explore the area in the hopes of discovering incriminating evidence. The dissent objects that this is precisely the purpose of the hypothetical officer who comes to the front door to knock and talk. He's very often doing that with the hope of discovering incriminating evidence against the occupant. Justice Scalia responds that the dissenters ignore the differences between the officer who comes to knock and talk and an officer who, and I'm quoting the court's language here, who enters the protected premises of the home in order to do nothing but conduct a search. In other words, and I'm quoting again, the background social norms that invite a visitor to the front door do not invite him there to conduct a search. So a visitor who enters the curtilage of a home to conduct a search is an unauthorized intruder. But how can we determine whether a visitor is there to do nothing but conduct a search? In response to the dissenter's complaint that the court is hanging its analysis on the subjective intent of the officer, Justice Scalia says it's not a matter of subjective intent. It's a matter of whether the officer's behavior objectively reveals a purpose to conduct a search. Okay, so now we need to figure out what it is about the detective's behavior here that objectively revealed that their purpose in coming onto the property was to conduct a search. The only answer that one can discern from the opinion and the facts is that officers came to the front door and used their drug-sniffing dog. That's what objectively demonstrated that their purpose was to search. There's a bit of a problem with this answer, to my mind. The detective's behavior only objectively reveals a purpose to search if we already presume the conclusion that using a dog in the manner done here is a search. The only thing their behavior objectively revealed is their intent to use this dog to detect drugs. And outside the context of the home, the Supreme Court has held that using a trained dog to sniff for drugs is not a search. So how can the court now say that engaging in behavior that is not in itself a search when done in public areas objectively reveals a purpose to conduct a search when done in the curtilage of the home? It's hard to find a clear answer to that question in the opinion. The proposition that the decision stands for something like this: when agents of the state enter the curtilage of the home in a manner that objectively reveals the purpose of conducting a search, their entry is an unauthorized physical intrusion and is therefore a search. Let me try to make clearer why that's a logically challenging principle. In Jones, there was a trespass, an uninvited physical intrusion, before there was a search. That is, it was a trespass to place a GPS device in the car in the first instance, then using that device to gather information made it a search. The purposes to which the police put the GPS device did not enter into the threshold determination of whether there was trespass. In Jardines, court appears to say that it's only a trespass. It's only a physical intrusion that exceeds the scope of implied license because the officers came to do a search. That inserts a problematic circularity into the opinion. What makes an action a physical intrusion for the purposes of obtaining information? That's Jones. When is there a physical intrusion under the curtilage that isn't invited by custom? When the visitor enters that area with an objectively revealed purpose to search. What kinds of behaviors objectively reveal purpose to search? Well, presumably those that look like searches, or at least a prelude to a search. And that seems to bring us back to the initial question of what makes an action a search. To be sure, we can certainly understand the opinion as holding simply that coming onto the curtilage of the house and using a drug-sniffing dog to detect contraband is sufficiently different from the way invited visitors behave. The unusual and alarming nature of the detective's activity puts them outside the bounds of the implied invitation. That makes it an unauthorized physical intrusion and a search for Fourth Amendment purposes. And the decision is important even if it's confined to its facts. It's just hard to say what other factual settings are encompassed by the legal principles that the majority articulates at a higher level of abstraction. The constraints that the Jardines decision puts on the use of drug detection dogs is important in light of the other court decision dealing with the use of these dogs in contexts where dog sniff is not considered a search, such as a traffic stop. Florida v. Harris, a unanimous court made it relatively easy for law enforcement to rely on alerts by trained dogs to establish probable cause for a subsequent search. Obviously, dogs are sometimes wrong. They alert when no drugs are in fact present. These dogs are trained and certified in a variety of ways, and evidence of that training is commonly used to demonstrate that a particular dog is probably right and that its alert provides probable cause to justify a search. At issue in Harris was the Florida Supreme Court ruling that required the state to produce a wide array of evidence about that dog's reliability before its alert can be used to support probable cause. This included training and certification records, an explanation of the particular training and certification of that dog, field performance records, evidence concerning the experience of the officer himself, as well as any other objective evidence known to the officer about the dog. The Florida court placed particular emphasis on field performance, how well the dog performs in the field in actual situations as opposed to highly controlled training environments. The Supreme Court unanimously rejected that approach to testing the dog's reliability. Writing for the court, Justice Kagan observed that this kind of rigid evidentiary checklist is at odds with modern jurisprudence, which has treated probable cause as a common sense standard that is not reducible to neat and flexible rules, and it's based on a totality of circumstances. That doesn't mean a defendant has no recourse to challenge a particular dog's reliability when its alert was used to discover evidence against him. And the defendant can introduce evidence about the unreliability of a particular dog and the inadequacy of its training at a probable cause hearing. Cumulative effect of both cases is to make drug dogs very useful in public areas, such as airports or on the road, while denying the police the authority to use dogs near the home without individualized suspicion. In public areas, a dog sniff is not a search and requires no justification, and police may continue to use an alert by a trained dog to establish probable cause without complying with any specific requirements as to the dog's training or certification. On private property, however, of private property surrounding the home, a dog sniff as a search in itself requires probable cause.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.